everybody. Welcome back. Nice to talk to you again. Thank you for tuning in. It's great to have you with us today, as always. This is Red Ice Radio. I'm your host, Henrik Palmgren, from Sweden, Scandinavia. The websites, redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com, is where we highlight corruption, conspiracy, coercion, subversive movements, and political ideologies that hold secret agendas. You know, those kinds of things that you don't know about. We try to shine a light on these so that the attempts to undermine you will fail. We also talk about aspects related to the initiation of force and state violence, but also on history, origins, culture and tradition, mythology, and the ancient records of our ancestors. We investigate all kinds of issues, and we examine all the various kinds of smaller aspects that together, we believe, paint a bigger and more comprehensible picture of the world. We have a new topic for you lined up today. Interesting story. 1984, a Swedish-Finnish man named Ior Bock came forward and told the world that his family, through thousands of years, had passed down an ancient oral tradition. The family saga from Strömsö Manor, or, as it's more commonly known, the Bock saga. This saga explains the origin of man on Earth and the origin of the Nordic culture that existed long before Babylon and Mesopotamia, according to the saga. Through 3 decades before his tragic death in 2010, Ior Bock passed on his knowledge to a loyal group of people consisting of both Finns and foreigners, friends and students. One of these friends is Michel Merrill, who joins us today from Holland to talk about the story of Ior Bock, the Bock saga, and the non-conventional history that is contained in this very interesting and different oral tradition, where sounds and words forming an original language is key to the mythology. Michel, thank you for coming on the program. Nice to talk to you today. Hope you're doing well. It's good to have you on the program.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm all right. So feeling is good.
Excellent. The Bock saga, something I've known about for many years now and haven't really covered yet and gone into in some detail. It's just, it's a big story, of course. There's a lot of different components to it, and we're going to try to explain it to our audience in such a way that makes it comprehensible and all the background to it. And there certainly might be opportunity later further down to get into some of the details of this. But before we talk about anything, what's contained within the sagas, any of the structure to it, the main source that it came from, of course, was Ior Bock, who unfortunately passed away. He was murdered in 2010.
Yeah, that's correct.
And he had a long, interesting life, and he was in the Swedish-Finnish language group. He was traveling back and forth, I think, both between Sweden and Finland. But just tell us a little bit about who Ior was, where he came from, and what he did.
Ior, I found out during the course that I get to know him, that he is from one very old family, and in his family, the Bockström family, they from about the year 1250, or from the year 1050, I should say, when whole Europe became under the information system of Catholicism. In this family, they have been keeping mythology, a saga which they transferred within the Bock family from generation to generation. And from the year 1050, they had to do that secretly because it is a saga that talks about heathendom, and that was forbidden to talk about under the Catholic information system. So they transferred that knowledge from generation to generation, and the member of the family who was supposed to get this information had to listen to this information over a period of 20 years and was educated 2 hours every day. So 2 hours they hear about this mythology, which all relates to the past of the people as it has been transferred within the Bock family. And Ior, I met him in 1975, and in that period he was a guide on Sveaborg, a sea fortress built on 7 islands outside of Helsinki, where he was guiding people around. and telling about the 18th century history of these seven islands, because in the 18th century there was one guy called Augustine Ehretswerth who built the biggest sea fortress on the planet on these seven islands. Now, the seven islands happen to be very important within the saga and the mythology of Finland. So we could say that it has been like a working place for the ancestors of Eobok. And he, because he was interested in the history of the seven islands, automatically he happened to get this job that he went around there with groups of people telling them about the history of the 18th century. So over a period of about 9 or 10 years, up to 1984, I have been listening only to 18th century history from here every time when we met. And from 84, when we were in India, in Goa, we were staying there in one fisherman village, and he told me that, look, I have an obligation to my family to give out this family history, this saga from Strömsö Manor in West Udenma, to give it out, because he happened to be the last one of his family. He didn't make any children, so he really was the last of this Bokström family. And he took back the original name in 1984, the name Bok, which was the name of that family before the year 1248. So only 1248, 1250, they become Bokström. But before, they were called Bok.
Mm.
So there you have a little image of this character. So from 1984, I have been listening to this mythology, which he had to give out in a certain frequency over the next period. And so he actually did that up to his death in 2010. And he felt also shortly before he died that he had been doing his obligation towards his family and been transferring in that period the content of the saga to a group of people who we became over that period since 1984. Who there are different people who had the time and the energy and the feeling to follow the content of this story, which is really interesting because it is opening up through the languages which are spoken in Finland, it opens up an insight into the content of how we were living in Heathendom, mm-hmm. The period from where we have no written information, only stories.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was there anything in that alluded to that he was, you know, had this knowledge that you talked about before? You know, you met him many years before, he never really talked about that kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden he decided to open up. Maybe it was a timeline given to him that, okay, when you reach this age, you have to begin to talk about it. And since he didn't have any children to pass it on to, he basically chose you and a number of other people to share this with. Is that what happened?
Yeah, you can really say like that, because it happened to be he got the order from his mother to start to, of course, divide the story with the people who knew him. So we were a group of friends, and we were in Goa, and there was really a timeline, because from the 24th of February, which is in the almanac the Scots Day of 1984, that they happen to be exactly, according to the Bok saga, 10,000 years after the ice time. And they have been making an agreement in the year 1248 with Birger Jarl from Sweden that they will not talk anymore about this story until 10,000 years after the ice time. And that happened to be 1984. So his mother died in 1984 in the spring, and she knew that from before. So she, when we left, or when he left to Goa, he got a request that he share this with his friends with whom he already been spending many years in Goa, and see what happened from there.
Huh, interesting. And Billy Jarl, of course, he was one of the first gentlemen there from, I think, the Bjelbo et of the family, who actually managed to consolidate the power in Sweden at the time, since there was many different fighting, families and,
yes,
and groups, you know, the Goths and,
He is from a Jarl family. So he was not a royal family like before you have in Sweden, Lingaet. And the Lingaet family, always the first son become crown prince. The first son of the king become crown prince and become king when the king die. But because Lingaet die out in the year 1067.
Yes.
And that is the period when whole Scandinavia become under the influence of the Roman Catholic information system. So that is in Sweden 1008.
Yeah.
And in Finland they come over 1050 to come to this heathen culture center and make that this stop to exist. So in that period Finland become part of Sweden. So from the year 1050 Finland, which was separate from Sweden up to 1050, become because the church came up via Sweden to Finland. Finland become under the influence sphere of the Roman Catholics,
yeah,
where the east side, the Russian side, is under the influence of the Greek Orthodox side. So Russia go over 987, in the year 987, to the Greek Orthodox, and that makes Finland to be the last heathen country in the north of Europe. Hmm. And that make that Finland become anyway part of under Sweden. And now in Sweden, out of this Jarl family that were left, after these high Jarl families that were left, they are choosing one king. So we start to get Ynglingaetten instead of Lingaet, as is the name of this family tree of kings that were living in Sweden. So out of this old Jarl family, the Jarls, they elect one Jarl who become king. Yeah, and so that could be a different family every generation.
Interesting. So what was the deal, if that was indeed what it was, that was cut between the rulers of the larger, Fenoscandia, I guess, or Sweden and Finland at that time, that, okay, we are, there was basically a lid put on the family that you're not allowed to talk about this. And in exchange, basically, we won't, kill you? Was that the level of
threat?
Yeah,
yes, because after 1050, when the southern area of Finland become destroyed, where is the old center of heathendom, many of these people who lived there, they had escaped under the inland population who speak Finnish. So the South Finnish people that we should go in after, I can explain that a little bit more detail. But Finland is a bilingual country. So in the south you have one province today which is called Uusimaa. But when you talk about Uusimaa, you can, in a Uusi is a Finnish word meaning new. So this same province in Swedish language is called Nyland.
Yes.
So we talk about Uusimaa and Helsinki in Finnish. And we talk about Nyland and Helsingfors in Swedish, but they do it in root, the language of what is today called Finnish Swedish is before 1050 called root. So the root language is a language which is spoken in the area today of Helsinki and on the archipelago, on the islands in front of the south coast of Finland. So there are people who speak root language, and in the root language this area is called Nyland or also Nymonhurnetslandet. And in Finnish it's called Uusimaa, but in another form Uudenmaa. Now Uuden is something, Uuden is one sound that in the heathendom relates, according to Boxhaga, to who then is the totality of the universe and the sun. So when we look to the sun, we can see Uden, the eye of Uden shining in the sky and making this fantastic nature what we live in here on the earth. Now this, I was trying to get somewhere, but I lost my line a little.
No worries, we're talking about Usinma a little bit, or yeah, Udinma.
Correct. Yeah, Udenma. So it's Udenma in Finnish, because you can talk about Udenma. It is one form of Usi in Finnish. But of course you don't write it like the Uden, like Udenplan in Stockholm. You write it one different way as Udenma in Finnish. Because there you make them with two horseshoes and D-E-N, where in root it is U-D-A-N, Uden. So the writing form of the root and the finish is different, a little different. But in sound they are exactly the same. So this is also the magic with when this whole story, which is an oral tradition coming from the Bok family, is making us aware of the fact that before everything was based on sounds, because you can of course write sounds in which way you like, but you can't change the sounds. Now the problem of the modern world is that we all give our own way of writing to the sounds we produce, where in a way we are actually all around the planet producing more or less the same sounds.
Right.
So of course the languages that are more close to root or more close to Finnish are more easy to understand for the people who have just this particular alphabet in the brain. But basically you can go all over the world with it. So that within the sounds is contained within the, according to the Bok saga, the whole Bok saga is based on the meaning of the sounds of the of the individual sounds of the language of root. And this was for me, of course, completely new. I never heard of something before like that one sound has one meaning, because we all learn A, B, C, D, E, F, G in the school. But for us, yeah, they are like something, like an agreement. It's something like we have been agreeing on to make A, B, C, D, E, F, G. But nobody at school anyway told me that A has a meaning, B has a meaning, and
right.
C has a meaning.
Yeah.
And that made for me the first click in the brain where I say, oh, wow, this is very interesting, because the language of root and of Waan, the Finnish language, both of them consist of the same alphabet, anyway up to 2050 when it was only a spoken language. Today we are living with the written language, where of course, because Finland was part of Sweden, it was the Swedish language which under the church period after 1248 become introduced in Finland, where also first in 1500, 1540s, 1560s, Mikael Agricola is making the first written Finnish language. But both of them are spoken languages from before, which both have an alphabet consisting of 29 sounds, where every sound has a meaning. Yeah?
Yeah.
And now also we have the marks of the sound. So why do we have A? Why do we have B? Why do we have C? Why do they look? Why they look? And it is this kind of information which is contained within the Bok saga, on which their whole story is based. So when you are going in the terminology of the Bok saga and its explanation of mythology, you can actually go with it around the world. Because it happened to do something with an enormous time span which we speak about within this book, Saga.
So let me ask you how extensive it is and what is encapsulated within it. I mean, can we say that it is a storytelling of the origins of the human race, etc., the origin of language in itself? Is that how it is in Christ? You know, was this something, I guess what I'm asking as well is this something that was known to all the people that were living before the introduction of the church into Scandinavia? Was this something that was commonly known, or was it only still something within the family that was kept in this way?
Before it was lived. So it has been, it makes a description, especially the Finnish language, make one description of life as we lived in the what we call the paradise time. So we start to talk about, in the Bok Saga, we actually talk about that the Bok Saga is based on 14. It consists, first of all, of the saga itself. And in the saga is an explanation of the mythology and the history. And all of this based on the sound system of the root language. The history of this Bok Saga is dividing the history of the human being roughly in four periods. Yeah, because we are talking about enormous, extensive time periods. So we have to kind of keep it simple. So in our, because he cannot transfer millions of years of history, it is something, when it's a 20-year story, you obviously have to make a shortcut of what has been happening from day to day, year to year. So we have to talk about extensive periods where, of course, different things have been happening within that period, which we can actually find out through the language. Especially the Finnish language. But anyway, it is based on the root language. So in the Bok Saga, we are dividing the history in before ice time, which they call the paradise time, under ice time, with Altland East time. So the Altland East actually says what it is, because Alt means all. Land means land, and ice means in this case ice. So it's the all land ice period, which is the under ice time.
Atlantis. It sounds like Atlantis.
It sounds like that is where Plato and other people have been getting their association of Atlantis. Today we live with the concept of Atlantic Ocean, but all of this is coming from the root word Altlandis. So the L has been omitted, and that is why they are looking for Atlantis in the ocean, because we have Atlantic Ocean. But actually, Altlandis is one creation of this planet under ice time. So it is the fact that the ice time came on the earth what creates Altland East, that made that all land is ice. Now, if you go to the geography of today, you can see exactly which land has been under ice on the north part of the ball, because there are the only land what we have, the only land that we have are actually Finland, Rusland, Svealand, Norland, Daneland, Island, Grönland, Saxland, England, Scotland, Ireland, Holland, Poland, Frankenland, Switzerland. They are the land. When you come south from the Alps and the Pyrenees, these areas are not called land, but they are called España, Argentina, Egypt, Morocco, Indian. The only exception is Thailand, but this was called Siam before. So when you come in the subtropical, tropical world, you don't find one country which is called land. So you can see on the globe that the northernmost part of the world, so the area north of the Pyrenees and the Alps, and then going further east towards the Black Sea, Caspian Sea, Mongolia, and you go over Japan and you come to the area which is north from the line San Francisco, New York. That is the area where you find Arctic culture. And all of this area was called land before. So also North America after ice time, this area which is today called Canada, Alaska, up to this line of, let's say, San Francisco, New York, it was called Rusland before. And only the last part, Alaska, was, I think, sold to America 1897 by the Russians. So in that, if you go in this whole belt around the world, you are in Rusland, and you come to Finland, and you come to Sweden, Norway, which are also all lands, because all their provinces are Jutland and Svealand and Norrland. And you come in Daneland, in Denmark, Holland, Friesland, England, Scotland, Greenland, Iceland. You see that all these countries are called land. So Altland East actually says that all this land was under the ice. Now, it come into existence according to the Bok saga, because in the paradise time, which is the time before ice time, this whole planet has been tropical, and or subtropical, tropical. And that was because in that time we had another North Pole than we have today. So today our North Pole is in one angle of, 23 point something degrees off in relation towards the sun.
Yeah.
But before ice time, the Earth axis was standing perpendicular in relation to the sun. So that make that in that time, the North Pole and the South Pole were 24 hours in light. And then when you got an hour away from the North Pole, you had 23-hour light, 22-hour light. And like that, you come to the equator, where we have 12-hour light and 12-hour dark. So in that period, the North Pole was on land, actually on one of the seven islands, which is lying in front of the coast of Helsinki. There outside is one island called Odense Ø, and on Odense Ø is the exact North Pole before the ice time. And in that time, the South Pole was not in that place where it is today, but in that time, the South Pole was somewhere between New Zealand and Tahiti. So in that time, the South Pole was water and the North Pole was land. Now, the ice time on this planet came into existence because the axis of the Earth fell over in what is called the first Ragnarök. So in the Nordic mythology, in the Finnish mythology, they are talking about three Ragnarök that are happening in the history of the human being.
Yeah.
And the first Ragnarök is when the axis of the Earth is falling over to that position where we are today. And that made that enormous amount of water go out of the ocean and become in the form of water damp circulating in the atmosphere around this ball, around this planet. And that make that the centrifugal power of the rotation of the Earth made that all this water damp is collecting above the North Pole and the South Pole of this planet. And it made that when this happened, the north part of the ball gets in that period where it is away from the sun, all this humidity, what is now in the atmosphere, is coming down in the form of snow and ice, and make that this whole area in the north of the ball become covered with one kind of like one hat of ice over it. So we had from the Alps and the Pyrenees northward, and northward from the Black Sea, Caspian Sea, all this land going over Europe, Eurasia, over the North Pole, and on the other side down to the line, let's say San Francisco, New York, all this become covered with one calotte of ice, with one head of ice, and 6 months later on, when the South Pole is away from the sun, this is happening also there. And this is a process which is going on for many years, so that in the end, kilometer of high ice is lying on top of that part of the world where we find, which we find back in the name Altland East, because all, it's exactly all these lands that are covered with this ice.
Right, yeah.
Now, that make that our, the whole tropical vegetation which we had from before become covered under that ice. And today we are thinking that that probably has been making that in the north we don't find any people. But many research that has been done over especially the last 25 years is showing that we are actually have been finding out that also in this ice, in this area, people have been living under the ice time. So we don't have only people living in the south of Europe in that period when the north is under ice. We have also in the north people who are living in areas which remained ice-free.
Yeah.
Mm. And the area that remained ice-free came in is in a, it's of course a coincidence that when you have this old North Pole, which was called Hel, because Hel means clear and light in the root language. So it means that the North Pole before ice time, in the paradise time, get the name Hel because it was always Hel in Hel. It was always light in Hel. It is a pure physical happening based on the fact that the Earth axis is standing perpendicular in relation to the sun.
So that's why that became an important placement as well on the Earth, because it was, in that regard, it was a sacred place. And this was over specifically over Odin's Ö, you said, Odin's Island?
On Odin's Ö is the exact North Pole. You can still visit today. You can go and see one hole in the bedrock where today there is one fundament over, because it is under the castle on Sveaborg, where the exact North Pole has been.
Wow.
And this place has one particular energy where also, according to this saga is centered around this area and is explaining why this area has the names as it has. Based on one old oral tradition, which is based on sound. So you can't change the meaning of the sound of the root language, because then all this saga, mythology, and history is falling into pieces.
Let me just mention something here as well, because for people who don't know, to take a look at a map or anything that you want over this particular region of the Baltic Sea, of the south of Finland, there are literally thousands of islands here, archipelagos, and basically imagine something out of the in the Mediterranean, the Aegean Sea or something like that, with all these thousands of different islands, and you get stories and mythologies coming from this place. There's actually even one work that actually detailed that the Homeric epic actually had this origin in the Baltic Sea, and whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it's very interesting to think about this concept that at one point in time, there was a different environment and climate on the Earth, specifically in this region, and that would be a magnificent place to be at, I think, if nothing else, because of all the islands and the waterways there,
Of course. I mean, there are more than 100,000 islands. And, if you go between the area of, let's say, Stockholm and Petersburg today, you have Åland Archipelago, you have Åboland Archipelago, you have Åbo Archipelago, you have the Helsinki Archipelago, and you have the, in Finnish it's called, or it's in root called Kymmeneland Archipelago, which is stretching past Viborg. And there are more than 100,000 islands in this area. So it's the biggest concentration of island that exists anywhere on the planet.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah. Only Helsinki archipelago have more than 30,000 islands, which is more than, for example, Indonesia and the Philippines combined.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, well, because they are so small, we don't pay the same amount of attention to it. But anyway, it's a nature phenomenon.
It is. And also, tell us a little bit more about the reversal, obviously, of what we can see here within the wording itself. The word hell, Helsinki, we get today, Helsingfors, we say in Swedish, but the reversal of the church of this particular area to denominate the most evil of places, hell. So how does that happen?
Yeah, well, in this book saga, everything seems to be a little bit opposite, because the words are based on sound, and the words that are based on sound, where every sound has a meaning, makes that we live by association. Yeah, so if you go before Einstein, and we can even throw a date on it, because the book saga is giving out dates also of when this kind of phenomena, like the falling over of the axis of the Earth, has been happening. So that was the first Ragnarök, which according to book saga is so far back in time, so it flipped me out when I heard it the first time, because that, according to them, happened 50 million, 10,000, and 30 years ago.
Wow, so that's pretty specific as well. So you're saying that there's a recognition of human existence that far back, or is the information coming to us from another way?
The information is coming to us in another way, because so far in that area we have no founts of something from before Einstein, with the exception of the finding of how the physical nature has been looking in the history. So when you go and dig in Scandinavia, Russia, and around the North Pole, all research show that there is one period in the history where that part of the bowl has been tropical.
That's right, yeah. People will remember, we've talked before on the program about Greenland, for example, that it was subtropical. They found animals and plants and all kinds of things up there. Yeah.
Also in Iceland, in Scandinavia, in Russia. So this we know. Now, if you think that 50 million year ago, 50 million, 10,000, and 30 year ago, to be exact, Earth become covered, that part of the Earth become covered by kilometers of ice. It's that vegetation that become pressed into the Earth where we get, for example, the oil from. Yeah, so the oil is like, what is it? It's an organic material that become, through the time, squeezed into these caverns under the Earth, where today we are sucking out the oil from these caverns in order to make our car drive, no? So in a way, that oil, which they also know from research, is about 50 million year old when they make the research on oil. So it shows that 50 million year ago something has been happening which make also the oil to come into existence, which we are mainly using in the last 200 years. We have different sites that show that before, anyway, the situation up there has been different, but we have no stories. We only have this, or we don't have, because they had to keep quiet about these stories. They were, of course, living in Scandinavia, in Russia, up to the year 1050. Many of these stories that are based on far away past and a totally different organization of life of what we had from before, and all of this is told in different mythology that has been coming into existence under the ice time, when the people who survived under ice time in the north around the Baltic because of the phenomena of the warm Gulf Stream that from the Gulf of Mexico, crossing the Atlantic, hitting the coast of France and England, and this concentration of hot water in that period going through the English Channel, crossing over the areas where today Holland, northern Germany and Denmark are, made that all the hot water coming from the Gulf Stream, when the ice time starts, is going into the Finnish Gulf, where it can't go any further in that area where today Petersburg is. So there the hot Gulf Stream start to make a rosette in front of the south coast of Finland, and leaving that area via the area which is today Mälaren, the Stockholm area, and then the big lakes going over to, let's say, the area north from Göteborg, north from Gothenburg, and coming out into the Oslo Gulf. And then in the time, this hot water has been starting to eat away on that ice along the coast of Norway and in other areas. But we are talking about one period of ice time called 50 million year, where these people who survived in this, let's say, hole in the ice that came into existence there around the Finnish Gulf, people who survived there because they had little light in these new circumstances that the Earth came into, became from tropical people what we today call arctical people with blue and green eyes. So the blonde hair people come into existence in this 50 million year period when we have this new position of the Earth axis, where they could not get out of this area because they were surrounded by thousands of kilometers of ice in all directions, where it was 2, 3, 4 kilometer high ice mountain surrounding these people. Where, of course, in this 50 million year period, there have been different periods towards, let's say, the end of the ice time on the continent, make that we find different remnants from them. So from the latter, there is now different research going on where we can already show that around even possible 200,000 year ago, 250,000 year ago, there have been living people up in the north. And this is all based on research what has been done over the last 20, 30 years. Where we come to this kind of things. And of course, this is confusing our traditional view of history, what we have.
Sure. Yeah.
But the magic of this saga that has been transferred within the Bok family is that they give one reasonable, logical explanation for all these phenomena, because it is the only saga that I know of existing on the planet which talks about how we were living before ice time,
right?
Which we call the paradise time.
Yeah,
yeah. Obviously, we've been falling out according to different books.
You got that right. Well, this is very, very interesting, and of course, there's just so much more to the story. We're just scraping the surface here, and in about 10 or so, we're going to take a break so we can squeeze a couple of other items in here before we do that. But there's a lot of things that consequently has happened here, of course. Why don't we just kind of carry on, though, with the basic outline of the history of the Earth, I guess, and what has happened, the different times. We were talking about from the Ice Age over to, the Paradise time over to the Ice Age time. What does it describe after that point? Are we still just kind of in the post-ice age at this stage, or where are we at now?
Yeah, we are a bit further on. So we let's finish that story of this four or five different periods in which they divide the history of the people on the planet. So we have the paradise time, on which I have not been getting any date when the first human being has been coming. But the only information I have is that 50 million year ago, 50 million, 10,000, and 30 year ago, the first Ragnarok started. So our paradise time finished, and we come into this Altland East period, which is under the ice time period. And this is lasting 50 million year. So up to, we come to the second Ragnarok, 10,000 and 30 years ago. And that is the moment when the hot water that has been eating later on in the time from the Finnish Gulf into the what is today the Ladoga Lake in Russia and the Onega Lake through the marshy areas going up to the White Sea.
Oh, so this is the Karelia region.
Karelian, the Karelia region.
Very interesting. I was looking into that recently, actually, because of some of the things that I discovered because of this, and it seems to that is actually a really important region, and there's still some pretty interesting buildings and structure in the region and everything else. So this is
correct.
Yeah, I always felt there was something drawn there. But tell us more about this. Yeah.
Yeah. So this area become after all these millions and millions of years of ice, which is slowly fading away, areas become ice free. So the hot water is basically eating itself from the Finnish Gulf towards the White Sea. When at the same time, the hot water along the coast of Norway is being eaten away by the hot Gulf Stream. So 10,030 years ago, when this hot water is connecting itself in the, let's say, North Cape Hammerfest area, it make that Scandinavia become one island on which is lying a lot of ice. But now this ice, which is connected to the ice cap lying over the North Pole, gets one break, one hole. And this makes that the ice on Scandinavia is starting to shift southwards. So these people around the Baltic, around the Finnish Gulf, they find out that when this ice starts to go on the move, they have to get the hell out of hell, no? Because otherwise they become squeezed by these enormous glaciers moving southward. So the second Ragnarök is the end of the ice time, when actually this break occurs by Hammerfest, and according to Boxaga, that happened 10,030 years ago. So we can say that the period where these people in the Arctic become kind of separated from their brethren in their brothers and sisters in the subtropical tropical part of the world is lasting 50 million years. So the Box Saga is telling about paradise time, where we have a global information system all over the planet, where in that time on the planet were spoken only two languages. So we have the Udenma area. Udenma is a ring land with a diameter of about 250 kilometers, where hell is the center, the exact North Pole. Yeah, and now outside of that, we have the world divided in ringlands where they are speaking not root language, but what is called Van language or Van language. And this is today the Finnish language of what we have left today. So before, yet both of them have the same alphabet, both have the same ABCDE, but with the Finnish language, you have a different possibility to out of the root language, which is a natural language that the human being get from the beginning, from when they first appeared on the planet. We didn't speak like the birds, and we don't speak like the elephant, and we don't speak like the monkey, and we don't speak like the lion.
Yeah.
We have this fantastic bone there in the throat, what make that we actually can produce A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And they have been basing their world and their information system on this sound that we could produce, of which these people knew the meaning from the beginning. So what they basically have been doing in the Bok family is being the bank vault of this sound system, this which is their base of their information system, which they create all these people around the planet from. So they base it from one program that we have in our brain from the beginning. So there the Box Saga is a little bit different than the traditional history, which make us to have been evolving language in the brain. Whereas the Box Saga is saying that the human being has been having the language from the day the first human being, after they were 7 years on the planet, this is starting to happen in their brain. And for that is one logical explanation also.
Oh, interesting. Now,
then we come to the third period. Let's just finish this period.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So then we get the third period, which is the after Einstein period, where these people from the artificial world now get the possibility to reconnect with their tropical brother and sister around the planet, who had to go their own way in this 50 million year period under the Einstein. So in this 50 million year period where these people in the north are sitting with the origin of the information system, the people in the tropical part of the world come into the situation that they have been dividing the tropical part of the world under Einstein in 10 areas where there become 10 kings which are like the stamfather to the people in their respective area. And there they, based on the Finnish language, are developing their own mythologies based on the mythology and the life from Paradise Time, from before Einstein, where we had one global information system based on the mythology of this root and van speaking people. Yeah, of this Swedish, of what is today considered Swedish, Finnish, and Finnish speaking people,
yeah,
where this mythology is kept. So there we have the third period from the end of the Einstein, so the second Ragnarök. Then we are going over to the third Ragnarök, and the third Ragnarök is the destruction of this Aser system from this Ringland Udenma in the year 1050. So we have the first Ragnarök is the keeling over of the axis of the Earth 50 million, 10,000, 30 years ago. The second Ragnarök is when the Einstein is finishing after 50 million years. So that happened to be 10,000, 30 years ago. And then we get the third period where they start to, these Arctical people start to occupy all this empty land that had been under ice, under Einstein, because tropical people were at that time not coming up to live in the Arctical world. It was more the Arctical people who went down to again reconnect with the tropical world. So that make that the area north of the Pyrenees, Alps, Black Sea, Caspian Sea, going over to Mongolia, north from there, were living Arctical people with blonde hair, blue and green eyes, where when you come south from that line, you find only people with brown and black eyes, like we all had before Einstein. Yes. Yeah, there we are in 1050, when the third Ragnarök happened, is when the information system of the Aser become destroyed and replaced with the information system of the church.
Roman Catholicism moves into the picture at that stage. Why don't we take a short break here then, and we'll pick this up after the break. And there's, of course, so many interesting components to it. There have been, I don't know if people know this, but there's been even excavations in Finland. They're looking actually for a physical temple. And this has been an ongoing quest, I guess, for almost over 30 years now, I guess. It's just a fascinating story of trying to kind of bring back this knowledge, of course, and even the temple, if you will, of the author or of this time, if you will. But let's give out a couple of websites here before we take a break, Michel, and then just pick up after that. There is one that you wanted to give out here as well. I guess it's tushhammer.eu, where people can read more about Urbok and the whole saga and get a good overview, I guess, right?
Yeah, in tushhammer.eu we have a collection of links to parts of this story what have been given out by Ior by himself and also by me and other friends who have been making different small things which are not complete, but anyway give like an overview, because it is impossible to write this history if you want to do it correctly, because it is based on an oral tradition. So if you can imagine that if you want to start to write down one 20-year story, you are writing and writing and writing, and then you have to find a publisher who wants to publish it, and the people who want to read it. You get such an amount of encyclopedia full of information, so we want to stick to the tradition of the Bock family, where of course people can write about the story, but it is impossible to write the story because it is based on sound. So then we should have to go back to introducing the root language, which today is only one spoken language. It's not written. The closest language to it is the Swedish language. Yeah, the Swedish written language. But the root language has never been written. So we should first have to introduce one new written language in order to be able to base it on the sound system. But this is maybe one future plan, but we can see. For the moment, it's better to just talk about it.
Yeah. There's a lot to share here, of course, a lot to give out. In the meantime here, we'll just refer to the website. I'll read that to you guys. You can go over there right now. T-O-R-S, as in Tors, which is the spelling of Thor in the Scandinavian version, I guess. And then you have Hammer, which is H-A-M-M-E-R. So torshammer.eu, that's the website to check out. We'll take a short break here, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us. We'll be right back with the second fascinating stuff coming up. Much more ahead in the second hour as we proceed with Michel and Merle. We get into the very exciting aspect of the excavation of the temple of Lemminkainen, that according to the tradition is a massive underground cavity, for the lack of a better term, where artifacts have been stored for thousands of years from this region, a treasure chamber of sorts of pagan times. This was allegedly closed in 987 because of the threat of the encroaching Roman Catholic Church in this region. Now, this is a real place. A number of digs in the cave were made on various occasions during 1987 to 1998, and several indicators is now that this cave have been sealed up. It turns out that the so far explored subterranean space is by far the largest cave ever found in Finland, so something is going on here. This is just a fascinating story, and we'll talk more about this in the second hour. RedEyesMembers.com is our members' website, and we have much more for you right there. You can sign up and stream or download any of our previous programs. We have well over 800 shows on all kinds of topics. So do take a look around. I'm sure you'll find something that will whet your appetite. We have many more shows coming up. Michael Schratt is next to talk about the Black Op program of man-made flying machines that we most likely would call UFOs, if we saw them. We are going to discuss who develops these, where the funding comes from, and of course what their mission is. We have our full list of upcoming guests in our radio archives. All right, hang on to your pants. We'll be right back with Hour 2. Thank you for listening.